What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. On this week, we're going to be talking about the nutritional deficiencies of the plant-based diet. And this is something that comes up a lot with me when people just assume when they see a tag at the grocery store and it says plant-based, everyone just thinks that's automatically healthy. So I wanted to break down what's going on with that and why that isn't necessarily true. But first, before we go into all that,
So we just want to talk about some new things that have been going on with our site and everything. So first off, I want to say thank you to all of those who have donated. We just recently added a donate button on our homepage. Scroll down towards the bottom, you'll see it. It's a bright orange button. So thank you for those that have donated. And if anybody's looking to donate, help us keep this podcast going, keep it free, ad-free for everything, please make a contribution if you can. And then we've added our podcast on a few new places. So we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, like we've always been, but we're also on Stitcher and YouTube now as well. And you could also listen to our podcast on our website. That's tntwellnessandnutrition.com.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you for the donations. Thank you for helping us keep this going and keeping all this information coming your way. It is, honestly, I would do this free of charge for the rest of my life. Like, I love doing this. It's really a passion, but it doesn't hurt to have money in the bank. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, give us money so we can buy more books and everything like that.
So I can buy more steaks. Yeah, pretty much. But before we get into the deficiencies of a plant-based diet and why that's not really healthy, at least in my opinion, let's do a little check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
So it's been pretty good. This last weekend, I did a little prep run I have a 50K coming up this Sunday.
Soon.
Yeah, so Saturday I did, it was supposed to be a 22-miler. It ended up being a 27-miler instead. I got a little lost on the way.
Oh, really? So yeah. Not on purpose?
Not on purpose. Okay. I ran probably about 22 miles and walked about 5, so I guess I did run 22 miles. It wasn't the best of circumstances. I got a shitty night's sleep. Started off the morning feeling like shit. We had our, fantasy football draft the night before, so I stayed up late, had a couple beers there, which isn't really that bad, but I haven't had beer for a really long time. So it kind of hit me the next morning, not hungover, but was like
off.
I had to use the bathroom a couple times, and not just the way I could just run to the side of the trail. Like, I had to, physically find a bathroom.
Yeah.
So that happened early on when I saw a bathroom. I was like, okay, I'm probably not going to see another one for about 6 hours. Let me use this one now. Did my thing, got out. Where the hell is my group?
Really? So is this out in Auburn?
This is, somewhere in Auburn. Okay. I think it was, Folsom area. And then I was like, okay, well, I think I know the general direction of where they went. So I just kind of, ran off in that general direction. Didn't see anybody in my group for about an hour. And then I finally did find two people, but they were lost, too.
Jeez.
So we just ran lost together for quite a while, just, going up a trail. Like, oh, no, this isn't right, coming back. Just, it was a mess. But I was like, hey, at least I'm lost with people. We finally got to, the checkup point. By then, we were probably an hour, maybe 2 hours behind that other group. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to run back to my car. We were supposed to run to, from one spot to, another spot that was 22 miles away. It took us 15 miles to go 10 miles. It was, the actual distance.
Because of, the backtracking and stuff?
Yeah. And we're just, lost, just doing all sorts of things. So I was like, all right, well, whatever. I'm just going to run back to my car. And so I got lost again on my way back. Not too bad, but eventually I found a road, and I'm like, okay, I know where this road goes. I'm just going to follow this road.
Are there any other people out there? You're really out in the middle of nowhere.
There were a lot of people in the morning. But okay. On like the way back, there's nobody out there because it's 90 something degrees.
It's hot. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. Like if you're doing any activity, you did it in the morning. It was really weird running about 13 miles without seeing another person on the trail until I got to the road and just like followed the road back.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
I mean, it wasn't really. I guess it could have been scary. Like I saw some deer, like some snakes, stuff like that. But like, I didn't see any mountain lions or anything. That would scare me.
Yeah, for sure, it would.
But one thing I did want to talk about is on this week on John Oliver's TV show on HBO, he talks about like medical studies, and we talked about this a lot last week, and just on how flawed they are. So one of the studies that he mentions is a study on dietary effects on cancer of the uterus. Guess who was studied for that?
Was it white males approximately your size?
100% males. 100% of people without a uterus.
Yep.
And that's who they conducted this study on, this medical study.
Uh-huh.
So it's just like, we talked about how bad studies are and how you actually need to like read through them. I don't know what kind of conclusion you can make at all from that type of study. Like, no, it's just completely worthless.
Worthless, yeah.
100%. You'd be better off at least studying, like, female mice. Something that actually has a uterus. Like, what are you doing?
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, we've talked about it, how all these general, I mean, not even general, all the studies, damn near, they study, like, the most average white guy with the average frame and height. What's your height and weight? Like, I guess you're a little low right now, but...
I'm like 5'8", like 150, somewhere around there.
Right? You're like the perfect little person to put tests on, you know?
Yeah, that's a 2,000-calorie diet is for somebody my size.
Yeah, so all the tests are done on people like you, even when they're supposed to reflect something going on in a woman.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, it was just kind of just... I already knew all that, but just hearing him talk about it and actually like interviewing women about it, I've never really heard that side of the story. And like, it actually made me upset. I always thought it was stupid that, like, I already knew that there was very few studies on women, but then just hearing their side of the story, and it's just like, oh, this is actually, like, a much bigger problem than what actually should be.
Yeah, and they say they usually don't like doing studies on women because of their hormone fluctuations every month, and that can kind of mess up data and make the conclusions really not maybe predictable. It's like, guess what, bro? That's how women are. You know, their hormones do fluctuate every month. Maybe we should study that.
Yeah, that's 50% of the population, and... that we just have no studies on at all.
None.
And I kind of get that if you're like a drug company, but even the government studies are like that too, which, I mean, come on.
I know.
Step it up.
Yeah. No, we talked about it before on the cholesterol episode that women naturally have higher cholesterol than men. They naturally live longer than men, and how no statin ever has been studied on a woman, and it should be criminal for a woman to take a statin. It really should. But that's just a drug company. Of course, they're not going to study women, you know?
Yeah, and it's really upsetting. And it was just kind of, like, interesting because we just talked about how bad a lot of these studies can be. It's like, well, yeah, here's another example of some really shitty studies that are even funded by our government.
Well, yeah, and I bet if you read that one, it's funny, I never watched that show, but I saw that episode you're talking about. I don't know why. We didn't talk about this prior to, but it's funny how that worked out. But the title of that, like, uterus study... like, what conclusions were drawn from that, and how many people ever even realized that study wasn't done on women?
Yeah, because most people are just going to read the headline and maybe the abstract.
And that's it.
And the abstract's not going to mention.
No, you're not. You'd have to go down to the chart and see Joe this, Tom this. And you're like, what, all these dudes? Yeah.
Yeah, you actually have to, like, read through the entire study to be able to figure that out. And it's just, I don't know, it's just so messed up what we do with studies.
Yeah, no, it really is. Yeah, it's super frustrating.
Yeah. So, what's new with you?
Well, I'm back to normal for the most part. I'm not going to bitch for 20 minutes about the
struggles. You're working out again?
Yeah, about the struggles of my life. Even though my struggles aren't really struggles. You know, I know I'm blessed, right? But, yeah, today was actually day 2 of a typical normal workout. So I just did shoulders and arms. I'm definitely not back to 100%. Like, I took so long off and I fasted so many days while I wasn't training that, you know, I definitely lost a lot of weight. But that's fine. I'm not too worried about it. It's nice to get back to my routine and to, I don't know, just feel normal. It's weird. Like, that is, my life really revolves around training and eating. So when that doesn't really happen, like, my life doesn't feel right.
Or you're just kicked out of your routine.
Yeah, like, heavy. For almost, like, it's been over 2 weeks now. So, but finally feeling normal, feeling good. And I'm back to it, back on the grind. And hopefully nothing else comes up. Cross my fingers, you know. Something will, though, because I'm a dumb gym bro, and I'll do something again, you know, in like 6 months. But for now, I feel good.
Have you done anything to test your back out yet?
No, God, no. I've done, like, even the two workouts I've done since have been real lightweight, real baby stuff, to be honest. Real, like, fluff-type exercises.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, that's probably smart. Ease your way back in.
Yeah, ease my way back in, yeah. Just doing, like, steady-state cardio, no high-intensity stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. I feel good. But overall, my week was pretty chill. Like, just getting into this podcast, I didn't have to do a lot of, I guess, research. I don't know, you didn't either, because we can talk about this shit off the top of our head.
Yeah, this is just stuff that comes up all the time. We've already discussed most of this already, so we're just trying to put it all together in one easy-to-find podcast, so you have one great resource.
Yeah, so we have a whole podcast on the nutritional deficiencies of a vegan diet, and we did that a while ago, maybe 8 months ago, and the only problem with that is Tom or I was busy. We couldn't actually meet up in person that day, so we did it over the phone, and the audio quality just turned out like shit. Like, once it gets compressed down from this audio and then uploaded to SoundCloud, uploaded to iTunes, like, the audio was just horrible. So I always hated recommending that podcast to people because just the audio just sucked. So I really wanted to do it again. And it's not going to be the exact same podcast, but it's going to be real similar, just pointing out the nutritional deficiencies of a plant-based diet. And I hear it all the time. I see it at work all the time. When someone hears, I mean, not that no one's going to know who this person is, but there's a vegan lady at work, and she's a big old girl. You know what I mean? She's probably like 300 pounds. And people look at her like, oh, she's like, how can she be vegan? She's overweight. And I'm like, hold on. With that line of thinking, they just assume vegan, naturally healthy, lean. And I'm like, that's not true. I was like, soda, vegan. Donuts, vegan. All this stuff, like these type of shit. The most vegan thing on the planet, a vegetable cooked in vegetable oil, French fries, all that stuff is vegan. If you're, say, you're on a carnivore diet or even a keto diet, we can't eat that stuff, you know?
No, not at all.
Not at all. So I would always argue, and this stuff isn't, you know, I always kind of hedge my bets like that. I really shouldn't do that. You can't argue this shit. These, what we're going to talk about with these facts about the nutrition in these foods, they're not up for opinion. When we're talking about bioavailability, when we're talking about literal amount of nutrients in foods, these things that are in these animal-based diets, they are more bioavailable and they are just plain healthier than a plant-based diet. It's not up for an opinion. This is not based on some dumb study. These are actual facts about the nutrition in food.
Yeah, Paul Saladino says this all the time, is that when you talk about the nutrients that come from animals, like, those are the same operating system as us. But when you get them from a plant, they're coming from a different operating system. So our body has to convert it. And every time we have to do some conversions, we lose a lot in the process. Not a little bit. Most of the time, like, these vitamins, they get, like, absorbed by us from, like, 5 to, like, 11%, somewhere around there. Maybe 0%. Because there's a lot of other factors that are going on. So one thing that's in all these plants is they have these anti-nutrients. We talked a lot about lectins. You can check out our podcast on donuts for that. We talked about all the other anti-nutrients in our soy episode. But just like all of them have some sort of defense mechanism to make the animal eating these plants sick so they don't overeat that plant.
Yeah, so they regret eating it. Like, yeah. Oh, maybe I shouldn't eat this poisonous shit. Yeah. But, I mean, you do hear a lot that people who transition to a plant-based diet naturally start to feel better. Like, what do you think that's about? Like, why would someone transitioning from a standard American diet to a plant-based diet start to feel better?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do more with the elimination side of it than the addition side. Yes. It's not that they feel better because they're eating more kale or spinach. It's because they're eating a lot less sugar, most likely. They're eating a lot less lectins and gluten from, like, the bread and stuff like that. They're probably cutting out a lot of other just, like, highly processed foods. Normally, you're not going to go vegan and just eat French fries all day long. You're
exactly.
Probably eating salads. You probably replaced your, like, Kraft macaroni and cheese with, like, some actual, like, a salad or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you are making, you're taking something that's highly processed and switching that over to something that's a lot more natural.
Yeah, and that's great, you know, because, like, I'm not trying to argue that, I don't know, a McDonald's hamburger is better than, well, actually, I would argue that a McDonald's hamburger is better than a, like a bean or like a lentils-based hamburger. But Like, I'm not trying to say kale is worse for you than, like, a candy bar. You know, everyone knows that's not true. But does that make kale healthy? No, it just makes it more healthy than a candy bar.
Well, if you're comparing something to, like, the very worst food out there, everything is going to be healthier. You know what I mean? Like, so if you go to McDonald's and you order a Big Mac and then you order, like, a milkshake, two things that are clearly not vegan, and you replace that order with a salad, obviously that salad's healthier. But that doesn't mean, like, it's the healthiest thing out there.
Exactly.
Like, there's a lot more nuance to it, and there's a lot more other things you can compare.
Yeah. So really, the deal with the plant-based diet, and even the vegan diet, of course, which is, like, the ultimate plant-based diet, is malnutrition. So malnutrition is defined as lack of proper nutrition caused by not having enough to eat, not eating enough of the right things, or being unable to use the food that one does eat. And I really like that last kind of sentence, because there is a common saying out there that you are what you eat, right? And I'm on board with that, but I think it should be twisted a little bit and say you are what you absorb, because there's all these, what is it called? Like colonics, where like they clean out your colon. What are those called? That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All that shit is just, literally, is just, it's dumb, because what's inside our GI tract is not technically inside our body. And I know that doesn't kind of make intuitive sense, but what's inside our GI tract and what we excrete on the back end, that was never inside our body. Our body absorbed all the good parts and left the parts that we couldn't absorb inside our GI tract. So we aren't what we eat, we are what we absorb.
Yeah, our digestive tract is just like a very long tube. It's just like one hole through another hole. Like, it's not inside our body, technically.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a crazy straw, like, donut hole type thing.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of weird how to explain it, but yeah, it's not in our body.
Yeah, so I had, I was doing that, like, 5-day fast last week. So I got through about 100 hours, and I had to deviate from the plan a little bit because my work schedule changed. So instead of fasting completely that fifth day, I ended up eating, but that was easy. You know, that was the longest fast I'd ever done, but a person at work, and this guy, he thinks he knows what he's talking about, but he really don't know shit. He was like, once he heard that I had been fasting for that long, and I messed up, I honestly shouldn't have told anybody, because when you tell someone you haven't ate for 5 days, they think you're crazy, you know?
Oh, they think you're gonna die, like, you're starving, you're anorexic, like, all these issues. Yeah, I don't talk about fasting.
Yeah, I shouldn't have, but whatever, he kind of overheard me talking to somebody else, but he was like, yeah, I think the only good thing about fasting is it kind of helps clear out your colon. And I was like, definitely not. And I even said, I was like, yo, you don't know anything. Like, yeah. I don't know why it, like, triggered me. And I was like, what do I give a shit about clearing out my colon? Like, no. I was like, there's this whole thing about autophagy and about, it's like a cellular recycling system that's a real huge benefit for growth and repair while fasting. And he was like, oh, well, yeah, you know, but your colon. And I was like, bitch. It was like a mute point. Like, it just didn't go anywhere with him.
He's probably on a high fiber diet to clear out his colon as well.
Every day. Yeah, seriously. But yeah, let's go through some of the vitamins and minerals that you aren't going to get on a plant-based diet, period. So the big one, and this gets brought up a lot, is vitamin B12. And so there is one, well, would you say a mushroom is a plant?
It's not a plant, but it's definitely not an animal. So I guess it fits with that plant-based diet.
Okay. It fits in that little, I guess, that wiggle room there. But you're not going to get adequate B12 from anything but an animal-based meal or food source. So you can get a tiny, tiny amount from mushrooms. So the RDA for B12 is about 2.4 micrograms a day. And so you would have to eat something around 4.4 pounds of mushrooms to get the adequate amount of B12. And you'd only have to eat 3 ounces of beef to get the RDA for B12. So we're talking 4 pounds to 3 ounces.
3 ounces isn't even like a typical hamburger patty.
No, and that's like the shittiest hamburger patty.
Yeah, that's nothing.
That's nothing, yeah. So,
and when we talk about mushrooms, when it comes to non-animal sources, mushrooms are generally like the best bioavailable form of most vitamins outside of animal sources.
Yeah.
So
mushrooms are weird. Like, they're their own thing.
Yeah, they're fungi. They breathe oxygen, exhale CO2 like we do, but they, like, use photosynthesis, kind of, and, like, absorb nutrients other ways. So they're like a hybrid in between us and plants.
Yeah, you want to talk alien on Earth? Yeah. Go look at some mushrooms, yeah. But vegans and vegetarians are 12 to 15 times as likely to be deficient in vitamin B12 than omnivores. And the reasons for this occurrence is because the richest sources of B12 are organ meats, sardines, wild salmon, or mackerel, or of course just meats in general. You're going to have very, very high amounts of B12 in any sort of meat product. And vitamin B12 deficiency is correlated to an increase in blood homocysteine levels, which were elevated in vegetarians compared to omnivores, and the highest were in vegans. I'm going to link to this study that had this finding. And elevated homocysteine is linked to heart disease. Homocysteine is a byproduct of methionine metabolism, and the vitamin cofactors B6, B9, and B12 are all needed to fully metabolize methionine, which is an amino acid, and reduce blood homocysteine levels. So this is such a huge thing to me that I think gets, I don't know, just not brought up enough. So homocysteine is a pretty decent marker for like cardiovascular health. You know, everyone talks about cholesterol, and we both know cholesterol is not the best marker for health.
No, not at all.
Right? Like, it's been twisted and confounded so many different ways that I really could care less about your cholesterol for the most part. But homocysteine is an okay little marker, and vegetarians and vegans always have elevated homocysteine. So how the shit are these diets supposed to be healthy when you're elevated this marker that increases your risk for heart disease? That doesn't make sense.
No, not at all.
Like zero. And we're talking not even a little bit, 12 to 15 times higher. Like, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, if you want to look at like percentages, that's 1200 to 1500% higher. It's a crazy amount, not that 18% higher with a colorectal cancer.
Yeah, risk. That dumb shit. Yeah, exactly. So,
and just talking about B12, usually it's a B12 deficiency that makes somebody that is vegan eat some fish. To like, because like, when you're B12 deficient, you have headaches, you're nauseous, you can't see straight. Like, it really impairs your nervous system. So like, you want to talk about feeling like shit. Like, you can't do anything. Yep. Like, you're like sensitive to light. Just everything is just off with you. And that's usually what will make somebody like, hey, I got to eat some meat. Usually it's fish. And hey, fish is like the best source of vitamin B12, so it's perfect.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you listen to like a lot of like former vegans on YouTube, most of them stop because of this reason in particular.
Yep.
They'll discuss their symptoms, and it just lays out exactly what we just went over.
Yeah, one of the symptoms of B12 deficiency is like mania. It's like literal mental breakdown. Yeah, do you think vegans sound pretty stable to you? Not usually. You know what I mean? They're the crazy fuckers walking around with like animal blood on their skin saying, don't eat me. It's like, okay.
And it takes quite a while. It takes generally a few years for this to build up. It doesn't happen just overnight, unfortunately.
No.
Well, I guess that is a fortunate thing.
Yeah, that is. For normal people, us, especially if you're fasting, that is a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, our liver can store usually a couple years worth of vitamin B12. But once those stores run out, good luck, man. It's a hard go. And it's funny, that's usually how long people go vegan. Exactly. Once that B12 runs out, they're done.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with that. No, like, I've heard stories of people just like walking through the grocery store and then just like have a massive headache. The lights are like super sensitive. They just kind of like get blinded by like the lights in the store and just like need help getting out of the store, need a ride home. They're just done.
Yeah.
And it like hits them like that.
All like, from this supposed healthy plant-based diet. So, but if you are on a plant-based diet, which you shouldn't be, but hey, you know, whatever, it's recommended to supplement with vitamin B12. So anywhere from 250 to 500 micrograms daily in the methylated form. And the bottle will say methylated B12. So if you do want to supplement with B12, make sure to get the methylated version.
And as far as I know, you can't overdose on B12 because it's a water-soluble vitamin. So you'll just pee out whatever extra you have.
Exactly. Yeah, so you'll see, like, the RDA on the back. Sometimes it'll say, like, 10,000% of your RDA. I mean, that I don't know how much good that extra amount is doing, but I know it's not going to be doing any sort of major damage, so I wouldn't worry about it.
I don't know. Maybe if you go up to, like, 10,000.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe there is, like, a tipping point, but yeah, it's pretty high.
Yeah, I don't supplement with it, yeah.
So the next topic we want to talk about is iron. So the type of iron that's in animal foods is called heme iron, and that's the iron that we use. Plants contain non-heme iron, so that isn't absorbed by the body well. So again, like, everything from a plant's different operating system. So even if you consume lots of iron as a vegan, you can still end up being iron deficient due to the absorbability problems. And the one way that they've been able to make those like plant-based burgers taste like meat is they add a bunch of iron to it. That was like their kind of trick to make those impossible burgers palatable.
Yep. It gives it kind of the right color too. The iron kind of, that's what gives red meat its unique color, is the iron in red meat. So red meat's very high in iron. But yeah, like vegans have been shown to be deficient in iron. Here's a quote. So an increased prevalence of iron deficiency was reported in macrobiotic vegetarians who consume brown rice, which is rich in phytates, as their staple food. Again, that's a combo. The iron from brown rice is non-heme iron, which our body does not absorb well, which our body simply does not use well, on top of the fact that brown rice is loaded with phytates, which bind to these minerals, example iron, and make them non-accessible to the body. So these plant-based sources of vitamins and minerals are kind of getting that 1-2 combo of the vitamin itself, we don't absorb well, on top of the fact that they have anti-nutrients in these foods that prevent absorption anyways. So we're kind of screwed twice when you get these things from plants.
Yeah, so like phytates and oxalates, they're the reason that there are these like high mineral contents in stuff like spinach and brown rice, but it's also because of those that we don't absorb it. So they're the ones that are binding to it. So it's like, oh, hey, they're pulling in all this iron, this magnesium, this stuff from the soil. They're pulling it in to the plant. But then they're also like still binding to it. We're not breaking those bonds. So we're just passing them through our system. We're not doing anything with it. So it's pretty much worthless.
It's worthless, yeah. And it's on a, it's just, and again, it's a problem with all this shit, man. It's just that the conversation usually gets boiled down to these little talking points. So you get white rice, which is pretty much a starch, right? And I'm a fan of white rice. But then nobody, any nutritionist, doctor, will not tell you white rice. They'll tell you brown rice because it has more nutrients in it. But no one's talking about, what about the phytates, bro? What about the non-heme iron, bro? No one's talking about that little extra step that those nutrients you say are in brown rice, that if you look up Google and say like vitamins in brown rice, it will come up. But there's not so, there should be some sort of like absorbability score next to the vitamins, and it's just a fucking zero, you know.
There was a I'm blanking on the name of the website. I'll find it and I'll post it in the show notes. There's a website out there that like ranks all these like superfoods by like how nutrient dense they are, and they gives them scores of like A pluses, A's, and stuff like that, and it actually does consider that. But it's a very, like, small website that's not very well known.
Oh,
okay. I'll have to find it in my notes and, like, pull it up.
Okay. Is it an app or is it just a website?
I believe it's both.
Okay.
I know when they were talking about it, they were creating the app. But it was, like, right now it's just a database, like, website.
Got it. I think I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name either off the top of my head.
It's not something super catchy.
No, it's not. Yeah. I want to say something with a T, like trifecta, but I don't know. But
we'll find it and we'll post it in the show notes.
Yeah. But that is that's the next level to the argument that people really should consider, is the absorbability of these vitamins. So
yeah, just like how you said earlier, it's not what we eat, it's what we absorb.
Exactly. So the next mineral that is going to be deficient in a plant-based diet is zinc. And so zinc is an essential trace element. And you need zinc for hormone functioning and reproductive fitness, cardiovascular health, optimal insulin functioning to prevent things like diabetes, and also just like mental well-being and performance. Like zinc's important for all these things. And like you ever hear oysters are aphrodisiac? Well, that's because oysters are very high in zinc, and zinc is a cofactor in the production of testosterone, right? So if you're trying to perform at your highest level, of course you're gonna want your testosterone to be as high as possible. So zinc deficiency is responsible for retarded mental and physical development and delayed puberty. This is a direct quote from a study. The diet may not necessarily be low in zinc, but its bioavailability plays a major role in its absorption. So zinc deficiency was first reported among adolescents in the 1960s in Egypt and Iran. So, and actually I found this, all this information is in the John Yudkin, the John Yudkin, Nutrition Encyclopedia. You remember that little book I have? You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Love that little book. So I found all its information in this book, and it talks about the first instance of zinc deficiency about Egypt and Iran. It talks about high intakes of unleavened bread, And so this is bread that doesn't use yeast. Things like flatbreads, tortillas, and roti. And the yeast that is in normal bread can break down some of the phytates, making more of the zinc bioavailability. Making more of the zinc bioavailable. But in these breads that don't use yeast, all those phytates are still there. They bind to the zinc, making it simply inaccessible to the body. So even though you're technically eating bread with zinc in it, there's so much phytates, your body's not absorbing any of it. So zinc deficiency is high in areas with high cereal and low animal food consumptions. And so these breads are high in phytates, which bind to the zinc, making it inaccessible to the body. And also dietary fiber also tends to bind to zinc, making it inaccessible. Vegans and vegetarians tend to have higher fiber intake, which can contribute to zinc deficiency. Once again, fiber is not the answer.
Does it make you think of anybody from like the 1860s? Maybe the John Kellogg whole story about cereal to not make you masturbate?
Oh, 100%. To kill sex drive? Yeah, 100%, yeah. These phytates will do it, man. Seriously. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All about that zinc, that precursor to testosterone. Yeah.
Yo, he was onto something. He really was. The one thing he got right was this, you know?
Yeah, I don't think he probably knew all the, like, the micronutrients going on, but he did observe that.
Yeah, he did, man. He got it right. So, honestly, the best source out there for zinc, surprise, surprise, is going to be meat. Like, go have a steak, go have some fish, go have a chicken breast, right? You'll get some zinc, and it'll be very bioavailable. And the RDA for zinc is about 15 milligrams. So if you eat, so in beef, you get about 6 milligrams per 100 grams, which is 40% of your RDA. So 1 pound of red meat, which may sound like a lot to a layman out there, but if you're eating in a species appropriate diet like me or like you, 1 pound of red meat is, that's literally nothing. That's not a meal.
Last night for dinner, I had a 24-ounce porterhouse with a, like, 4-ounce salmon.
That sounds great.
And that was, like, half of what I ate that day.
Yeah, so you got way than more.
So,
than
I don't know, quadruple the RDA?
Yeah, exactly.
Just from the steak alone? Mm-hmm.
So 1 pound of red meat, you're going to get about 27 milligrams, which is way more than enough you'll ever need. So once again, zinc is more bioavailable, more present in meat-based products and an animal-based diet, not on a plant-based diet.
So next is going to be vitamin K. So there's two different, oh, actually, I think there's like 7 different types of vitamin
K. K is a little tricky.
There's actually not a whole lot of like studies out there on vitamin K, not as many as I'd like to see. So there's K1, which comes from plants like spinach, kale, most of like your green leafy stuff. There's very little evidence, if there's any evidence at all, that we can use that to our benefit.
At all.
So maybe it's beneficial, maybe it's not. Seems like there's a stronger case that it's not beneficial at all. So K2 is very important for bone health. That's the actual vitamin K. That's the form that we can actually use. So it ensures calcium is deposited in the right places. So without sufficient K2, the body is more prone to deposit calcium in the arteries, leading to heart disease. Not a good thing.
Yeah, calcification of the arteries is not a good thing.
So it puts it in the arteries instead of the bones where it belongs is where we want it. So vitamin K2 will also reduce cardiovascular disease, help preventing diabetes, and improve hormone functioning. So great sources of vitamin K2, you can get it from like butter, it's like a good fat source, also ghee. You can find it in like fermented soy products like natto, but with that, like you're getting a lot of other...
Fuck soy.
Anti-nutrients and stuff like that. Egg yolks are another great source. Lard, that's like pig's fat, those are also great sources.
You think someone should supplement with it if they're going to be on a plant-based diet?
Yeah, you need about 50 to 100 micrograms of K2. And where would you get that from? Just like a K2 pill?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
So that's probably something they should do if you are going to be on a plant-based diet. But once again, vitamin K2, the vitamin K that actually matters, is going to be present and bioavailable on a meat-based diet, on an animal-based diet, not a plant-based diet. So the next vitamin is vitamin D3. And vitamin D, similar to vitamin K, has similar or opposite forms, and some of them are more functional than others. So plants contain vitamin D2, which our body has to convert to vitamin D3. D3 can only be found exclusively in animal products. So good sources, again, are egg yolks, fatty fish, and dairy products. D3 is more easily converted into the biologically active form 25-OHD that has been shown in studies to help with bone health and regulating where calcium goes and how much. So honestly, the best way to get vitamin D, we've talked about it before, it is hard to get on in your diet, even on an animal-based diet. The best source might be something like butter or lard. But if you go out in the sun, how much vitamin D are you going to be getting?
So it depends on basically how much exposed skin you have and your like skin tone. So like a darker person from like 20 to 30 minutes, you're looking at about 8,000 micrograms. And if you're the whitest person out there, you're looking at like a maximum of like 50,000 micrograms.
A lot.
So that's way more than what you're going to be getting from any food.
From any food, yeah. Even if it is like an animal-based diet. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more about like the benefits of sunshine, we did a whole podcast on it, the sunscreen podcast.
Yeah.
That was, like 4 or 5 episodes
ago? Yeah, a couple ago. Yeah.
So the last one that we're going to talk about is vitamin A. So plants contain beta carotene, and that gets converted into retinol, maybe like 10%, like in the best case scenario, and that's if you're consuming it with a lot of dietary fat, because it is a fat-soluble vitamin. Most likely you're around that like 5% rate. So what we actually need is retinol, and we go into a lot more detail on this in our egg episode. I feel like we can talk about all these, we can just reference other podcasts.
Yeah, that's true.
So this can like vary greatly from person to person. Some people won't be able to convert beta-carotene at all, and others will be able to create enough. So it really just kind of depends. There's a lot of other factors going on there. So your best source is just to eat something rich in vitamin A, like egg yolks.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to link this study on the website. This is a direct quote. So people, like I said, you know, you Google kale or some sort of leafy, dark green leafy vegetable, and you'll say there's some sort of vitamin A on there, right? So here's a quote, an increased intake of dark green vegetables did not improve vitamin A status in vitamin A deficient women in Indonesia. So it's just plain and simple, even though the back of the label will say vitamin A is in this food, you are not absorbing it. And I'll say it again, you are not what you eat, you are what you absorb. So what's the point if you're not going to be absorbing these vitamins and minerals? There's no point.
No, not at all. I mean, it's not like kale tastes good, so you're not eating it for the taste.
Exactly, right?
That is one of the arguments why, like, grass-fed beef is superior to, like, grain-finished beef, is because of that yellow fat color. It's richer in vitamin A.
Yep.
And then that's also why you can kind of tell, like, heritage breed, pasture-raised eggs are better than, like, factory-farmed eggs. It's, like, they're much darker orange, and that's because they're much richer in vitamin A.
Yep. Yeah, there's honestly very few differences between a grass-finished and a 100%... Well, no, grain finish and 100% grass-fed beef. There are some, but the big one is probably going to be vitamin A. There really is a difference in the vitamin A content. So, I want to finish with something called the 5 C's. And these are 5 compounds that are going to be found, and they're, again, in their highest amounts and their most bioavailable form on an animal-based diet. And these are choline, carnosine, creatine, carnitine, and cholesterol. And those are 5 essential nutrients, and especially if you're out there looking for any sort of physical benefit, some sort of physical performance boost, these nutrients are going to give you that edge. And you're only going to find them in an animal-based diet, not on a plant-based diet. So once again, animal-based diet coming through, plant-based diet deficient in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, cholesterol, I know that gets a lot, like a really bad rep, and we did a whole podcast on it. But one thing I don't think we talked about is how important it is for, like, your brain health. Cholesterol is what makes up our myelin sheath, which is so important for all our nervous systems. It wraps around our neurons and is responsible for us being able to send impulses throughout our body, be able to send signals. So cholesterol is what makes that. So if you have a developing brain or you have an injured brain, you need lots of cholesterol. And it was even better is if you're on a ketogenic diet, because you can either convert ketones into cholesterol, or you can convert glucose into cholesterol, or you can just get dietary cholesterol in general. So the best source would be ketones, because it's a much cleaner conversion than glucose. So if you do have any sort of like head trauma, ketogenic diet is a great one. That's like the only time I really suggest taking exogenous ketones, and also make sure you're eating a ton of dietary cholesterol.
Yep. Yeah, that's very true.
So that also could explain part of the like mania and like the other neurological factors.
Low cholesterol.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Along with the vitamin B12.
100%. Yeah. So yeah, so that's the vitamins and minerals that are deficient on a plant-based diet. Again, it's a shit ton, right? Like, it's not just one thing, it's a lot. I do want to talk a little bit about the protein, because there are so many, I don't know how many different claims you see out there. These companies make a plant-based protein, like a pea-based protein, and they claim that it's better than whey. Like, that's pretty common.
Well, that's what that whole movie Game Changers, the whole vegan, like, athletic movie that's coming out, that's what it's about, is protein is protein.
Yes.
It's not amino acids. All that stuff doesn't matter. It's just protein is protein, which is not the case at all.
No. So this is something I've been, like, ranting about, I feel like, since we started this, and that's the difference between crude protein and true protein. And the only problem, again, with this argument, and that it is a little detailed, it is a little complicated, so I'm going to try and just go over it as basic as I can. But crude protein is a bad way to gauge protein content in food for humans. So in cattle, so just, I guess, before I should say this, the protein you see when you look at a nutrition label, I don't care what it is, if it's steak or like a can of beans, is actually a marker of the amount of crude protein in the product. So that's how our system is based. It's based off of crude protein. That's because it's easy to do it, and it kind of benefits the vegetable and lentil bean kind of industry. And I think that's why we use a crude protein marker, not a true protein marker.
So what are they measuring with that crude protein?
Nitrogen.
Okay.
They're simply measuring the nitrogen content. And guess what, bro? Humans can only digest nitrogen in the form of amino acids. We can't digest non-protein nitrogen, and that's the difference. But guess what? Does that sound a little complicated?
A little bit.
Sure fucking does, and I hate it. You know what I mean? But that's how these people get confused. That's how people put misinformation out there, and no one really, either you don't have a science background or you don't just have the interest to like look into it. You just think protein is protein, you know?
Well, this we talked about this, I don't know, a month ago on What's New, and I was talking about pork rinds, and on the back of most pork rind labels, right next to protein, it says not a significant source of protein, and that's because it's all mostly collagen protein. And there are amino acids lacking from it. But there are with plants, too. And it should say that on the back of peanut butter. It should say that on the back of carrots. It should say that on the back of everything that's not an animal.
Yes,
it should. And it isn't. And that's, like, really upsetting. And that's kind of like, hey, it's not about what we eat. It's about what we absorb.
Yep, exactly. So as far as crude protein in cattle, it's great. And it's really what it's designed for. To make sure the feed given to cattle has enough nitrogen in it. Because ruminants, and these are animals with four stomachs, can absorb non-protein nitrogen and turn it into protein-based nitrogen in the form of amino acids. However, humans and other animals with one stomach, so think chicken, pigs, lions, dogs, we're going to be talking about dogs in the future. Our GI tract is damn near identical to a dog, just so you know. But we can only absorb nitrogen in the form of amino acids. So to get this crude protein value that you see on the back of a nutrition label, you measure all the nitrogen in a sample of food and you multiply it by 6.25. And they use 6.25 because protein is 16% nitrogen. So 100 divided by 16 equals 6.25. So the first assumption there is that all nitrogen in the sample is in the form of protein, specifically amino acids. And that assumption is fairly accurate when measuring animal products like a steak. So over 90% of the nitrogen in red meat is in the form of amino acids. So that's perfect. That's great. On the back of a steak label, this says 25 grams of protein per serving. Guess what? You're going to be getting about 24. It's perfect. But however, in the case of something like beans, only 50% of the nitrogen is in the form of amino acids. The other 50% is the nitrogen that our body can't absorb. So why would this nitrogen be added to the label as dietary protein? It overestimates the amount of protein coming from plants. And that's because something like a peanut or a pea, they actually fix nitrogen from the air. They're able to pull nitrogen that comes in pairs, so N2 from the atmosphere, and they fix it, meaning they split it into individual nitrogen atoms. And then that gets accounted for protein. Guess what? We can't absorb individual nitrogen atoms, so it don't even matter. But that's how our system's set up, and it's super frustrating for someone like me. You know what I mean?
You know, when you actually look at a list of, like, what are the most bioavailable forms of protein, it's all animal-based things. Like, the top of the list for, like, humans is mother's breast milk. It's like the very most bioavailable form of protein, which makes sense. If we're designed to consume anything, it's that. Eggs are right up there. Like, I think they're like second on that list. Red yeah. meat, all the next like 10 sources are all going to be meat-based products.
Yep, all animal-based.
Yeah, and then way down on the list is when you're going to start finding like animal or plant-based sources.
Yeah, and by that point, those cannot be considered quality sources of protein. And the score to look at is DIAAS, Digestible Indispensable Amino Acids score. That is the protein score you should be caring about. I think it's a PDCAAS. Screw that score. That score was made from the soy industry. If you want to learn more about that, listen to the soy podcast. But to go back to beans, so in reality, pinto beans are said to have 9.3 grams of protein per 100 grams. In all actuality, it's closer to 5 grams per 100 grams. That's a 53% of its reported value. So pretty much in half. That's huge. What if I like went to the bank and I was like, oh, my mortgage is $3,000. Hey, I got $1,500. We good?
No.
No, bro. We're not good. Yeah. So I hate that, you know? So in 100 grams of beef, you have 28 grams of protein. Its true protein value is 26 grams. So that's 93% of what is actually reported. So it's right on point. It's fine. That error is negligible. So I don't know, man. It's just crazy.
And to even make the beans a complete protein, because they are lacking in amino acids, you need to mix it with something else. Something like a grain. So like that's why rice and beans are typically consumed together, is because individually they're both crap when it comes to protein, but combined, then they form a natural or a complete protein.
Yep.
So you have to consume both of them. So even that like value is not even that accurate either.
It's not. And indigenous cultures found that out. They knew that type of information going on, you know?
That had to take a lot of, like, guess and check.
Trial and error.
I mean, especially because beans are one of the most toxic things out there. I don't know. I really don't know how people started eating beans.
Like, how many times they messed yeah. up. I know.
And same with rice. Like, you have to do quite a bit to rice.
You do.
You have to take the husk off, boil that shit for a long time.
Make it super white.
Yeah, and then you can eat it. Like, there's a lot of, like, processing in both of those.
That's true. Yeah, so in order to match the amount of protein from beef by replacing that with beans, which again would be a high protein source for a vegetarian or someone on a plant-based diet, you would have to eat 5 times the amount of beans. So 500 grams of beans is equal to 100 grams of beef in terms of protein. That's over a pound of beans in a single day. Who the shit is eating a pound of beans a day?
Well, somebody that would have to live by themselves, because nobody's going to want to be around that gassy motherfucker.
Seriously, man. Stay home. It's just, I don't know, it's just crazy. And everyone talks about, like, the plant-based diet, and everyone should go on a plant-based diet for the environment. What they never bring up is the amount of plants we would have to eat in order just to hit our minimum values. We would have to eat so many more plants per person. It's ridiculous, you know? We want to go into the fats, the big difference with the fats and plants?
Yeah, so one of the main things with fats is going to be mostly with the omega-3 fatty acids. So plants contain ALA, which is worthless. We have to convert it into either EPA or DHA. I'm not going to pronounce them because those are way too difficult and nobody ever says their real names.
No, they're so hard.
So ALA can get converted into EPA or DHA, but it's between like 5 and like 12% depending on a bunch of other factors. So things like walnuts and pecans, those are touted as like good sources of omega-3s, but not really when you consider like the conversion rate.
Yep.
And one thing that's really important is about keeping our omega-3s and our omega-6s balanced. We want that ratio to be as close to 1-to-1 as possible. And I don't think that you can even get close to that off a plant-based diet. There's just no way around it.
There's no way around it. And there's actually a quote here. So DHA is believed to play an important role in the retina and in the central nervous system. Lower proportions of DHA have been found in both plasma and cord artery phospholipids of vegetarians compared with omnivores. Again, it's just simple. They test the blood and they have lower levels of DHA. Actually, another quote, lower levels of DHA were also found in the milk of vegan mothers compared with omnivore controls. And the erythrocyte lipids of the infants also contain a lower proportion of DHA than those of infants breastfed by omnivorous mothers or those of infant bottles fed on cow's milk formula. So cow's milk is more healthy than a mother's milk or that's a vegan. That's sad.
Yeah, not only are vegans limited in the amount of DHA they can convert from ALA, but the diet is usually a lot higher in PUFAs, that's polyunsaturated fatty acids. This environment further reduces our body's ability to convert ALA into EPA and DHA. So taking that like 11% down closer to that 5%.
Yeah.
So this is a quote. With a background diet high in saturated fat conversion to long chain metabolites is approximately 6% for EPA and 3.8% for DHA. With a diet rich in N6 PUFAs, conversion is reduced by 40 to 50%.
Yes. So we're talking maybe 1.5% for your conversion of ALA to DHA. And that's because you have to convert ALA twice. You have to actually elongate it twice to turn it into DHA. So it's actually a pretty complicated process. And I don't know. And like I said before, donuts are vegan. Donuts are plant-based. Soda is plant-based. Potato chips are plant-based. All these oils in these foods are very high in omega-6 fats. So something like soy oil, canola oil, corn oil, all industrial seed oils that are perfectly vegan are all super high in omega-6 fats. And that'll further hinder your body's ability to make these the omega-3 fats that we actually need.
Yeah, so ideally that should be a 1-to-1 ratio between 3s and 6s. And if you're on like a vegan-based diet, you're going to be maybe at a 10-to-1 ratio. And I don't even think that's going to happen. I think you're going to be closer to like a 20-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that they're competing for the same receptors. And they do opposite things. Omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. Omega-6s are pro-inflammatory. If you talk about any sort of chronic disease, a marker for that is chronic inflammation. So if you're consuming a bunch of pro-inflammatory foods, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be in a chronic state of inflammation.
That's not a good thing.
Like anything with itis at the end of it means inflammation.
Yep.
And that's almost every single chronic disease is some sort of chronic inflammation.
Yep. So seafood is by far the best source of EPA and DHA. So 6 ounces of cold water fish, something like salmon, have about 900 milligrams of EPA and 1,100 milligrams of DHA. So 2 servings of fish per week is enough for all the omega-3s you need. 1 egg contains about 100 milligrams of DHA, so that's a decent source as well. And I guess if you are going to be vegan, you are going to live a plant-based diet, the best supplement to get EPA and DHA would be from algae. So that would be the best source if you can find it.
Yeah, it'd be things like spirulina or chlorella.
Yeah.
One source that's like touted as a superfood is like flaxseed. But again, that's in that ALA form. So after you do the conversion ratio, it's really not that good of a source.
It's really not. Nope. You're going to eat enough flaxseed until you're blue in the face. And then you're still not going to have enough of the actual fatty acids that your body needs. Well, so shit, that's a lot.
Yeah, you're better off just buying some salmon I love salmon. Salmon's delicious.
Yeah.
Some salmon roe. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's even easier. Yeah. Just take a little spoonful of that a day.
And you're good.
Some sardines, something like that. Those are cheap as hell. Like, yeah, there's a lot of cheap, easy options out there to get that.
There is. So, yeah, those are all the, I guess, nutritional deficiencies of a plant-based diet, or at least the ones you really wanted to cover on this podcast. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
I mean, I think that's about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with eating plants like in small doses, but that should not be your primary source of like pretty much any sort of nutrition. Like you should be eating meat for all your nutrition. If you want to supplement with some plants, I don't really see a problem with that as long as you handle those properly.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, one of my buddies recently texted me a picture of he has some tri-tip with some asparagus. And he was like, sorry, bro, I have to have some asparagus. And I was like, hey, man, that's fine. I was like, do your thing, man. Nothing wrong with asparagus. I was like, but don't get it twisted. You're getting all your nutrition from that steak.
Yeah.
But if you like the asparagus, go ahead, you know?
Yeah, and I think small children hate vegetables. And I think that is like our nutritional intelligence that we're like born with. And they just realize like, I'm not getting anything good out of this. It doesn't taste good. It could be actually harming them if they have some sort of sensitivity to the anti-nutrients in there.
Yep.
So I think that's why like almost all children don't like vegetables.
Exactly. I think that's very true. Yeah, that's something. That's an angle people don't talk about a lot, but that nutritional knowledge, man, it's baked into all of us. It's just in our DNA.
It had to be, or we wouldn't have survived.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like I supplement with plants every now and then. After like my toughest training day and before my next race, like I'm going to eat like add some sweet potato to my eggs and bacon. Like that's gonna be my like night before meal of my long race, just to replace my glycogen source.
Mm-hmm.
But like, hey, I'm doing something extremely unnatural, so I'm like adding something to supplement to it.
Yeah,
I'm not using that as like my prime source of nutrition.
Yeah, you're not looking at that like, oh, I'm getting all my V vitamins from this.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, hey, I'm getting a lot of good protein from this sweet potato.
Exactly.
No, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. So did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, this one's a little bit different, but I think it should be really helpful to a lot of people. And it's about selecting the right rewards. So a lot of people, like, they have a goal, hey, I want to lose 2 pant sizes. So after you lose those 2 pant sizes, what do you reward yourself with?
Soda.
Some chocolate cake or some ice cream. So what'd you do with your reward? You just destroyed all the progress that you made. So it's about choosing a reward that actually helps out your habit. So, hey, if you're working out hard, like my reward for me running this marathon is I have a massage scheduled the next day. That's my reward for putting in all this hard work. I'm working out hard, I'm gonna get a nice massage. Or, hey, if you do lose a couple pant sizes, your reward could be, I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna buy some new clothes. I'm not saying like you can't have like these, like never eat ice cream again, but just don't let that be a reward to something that's like the complete opposite of your goal. Because that's actually not going to help you establish that habit anymore. It's actually going to make it worse. If you have rewards that support your habit, you're more likely to continue that habit. Like if you lost 2 inches, you eat some ice cream, maybe you gain back 1/2 inch, that you're going to be discouraged and it's going to make you a lot less likely to continue your diet or to continue your exercise program. So just select rewards that support your like habits and not destroys them.
That was a great tip. Yeah, and people fall into that trap all the time, especially when they start a new diet or workout routine.
You know, I was really guilty of that too, because for the longest time on my longest runs, my reward would be I'm going to eat some ice cream. And I haven't been doing that this last couple months. I've been making sure, like, my rule is I'm going to eat one meal that's super healthy, and then after I eat that super healthy meal, if I still want ice cream, cool. It hasn't happened. I don't remember the last time I've had ice cream. Most of the time, because after my long runs, once I'm home, my ass is too lazy to go back out.
Yeah, it's not happening. Yeah.
But yeah, like that's just kind of what you want to do is your reward should be something to establish it. So like, hey, I rewarded myself last week. I bought a new backpack for running. I'm going to go buy some new shoes pretty soon. You know, like treat yourself. Hey, you know, maybe you need some new headphones to help you work out. Hey, you lost a couple inches. Buy yourself some new clothes, some new shoes. If you're trying to read more or maybe you're trying to write more, your reward for doing that, maybe you buy yourself a new laptop. Something like that. Something that's actually going to help you continue that habit.
Yep. Yeah. Great tip of the week. Well, all right. That's another episode in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to reach out. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that.
Yeah, and if you want to support the podcast, again, you can donate on our homepage. It's TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We appreciate all the support. And if you can't contribute financially, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. Give us comments, give us feedback. We greatly appreciate it. We read them all. You can find our podcast on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, and our website as well. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.